They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, they tried to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go.
Welcome to the 40th episode of the Pirate Monk Podcast, coming to you live from two coasts. Well, from the coast and from the middle coast.
The landlocked state.
I'm your host, Nate Larkin, here with our fearless engineer, you're the bishop now.
Bishop Mondo.
Bishop Mondo.
Wait a minute, you were on like Project Runway, now you're a bishop?
Yeah, that's
got married in between.
The clergy.
You're a busy man, and I never know what you people are talking about.
We're here in Mondo's hit-making complex, high above the Mellow Mushroom in Franklin, Tennessee, and joining us via simulcast by satellite from Studio B in San Luis Obispo, California.
Oh, hold on. I've got the people we're interviewing, your Studio
oh,
B,
that's
sucker.
Right.
In Studio A today.
In Studio A today.
Thank you very
Admiral
much.
Admiral Aaron Porter.
Yeah, the Admiral, yes.
And some very special guests who he will introduce shortly.
Yeah.
So how's it going out there in Tennessee?
Fall is here, brother.
Oh, yeah.
It is absolutely wonderful. I've had a great week.
Good, yeah, me too. Had a pretty good week, man.
I'm working hard on the Darryl Waltrip book, so I'm writing up a storm here in
good.
Yeah.
Good.
Holding down my seat at Starbucks. It's going good.
That's good. That's good.
My big news is I got a new phone last week.
Oh, which one?
Well,
now tell me say there, Nate. Why'd you get a new phone?
You know, you've got to have you have to stay in touch these days, and the old school phones have pretty much been phased out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crucially important if one is to leap to this smartphone, and one has a problem staying within boundaries on the internet, that one obtain a phone that can be filtered or at least have some great accountability software on it. And not all phones do. Yes?
I feel I need to translate for you because that was all that. It was a great example of that kind of masked speaking kind of thing. So, dude, if you check out porn and naked women a lot and have a problem with that, then you can get software on your phone to help you not do that. That's what Nate was saying just then.
Wow. Wow.
Come on, you write a whole book about being a sex addict, and then you make that confusing?
That's the living Bible version of what I just said.
Way to break it down.
All right, so explain to me how your droid works in
this.
Well,
see, there you did. You just broke it.
Filtering
you
capacity.
Already told them I bought a droid. I did. At your recommendation, Aaron, I bought a droid.
Oh,
God.
All right,
yeah,
sorry,
it's the
Google-based
phone, right, which can go on any network. I happen to be a Verizon guy. And one of the great things about the droid is that there is software available for it from our good friends at Triple X Church. A one-time buy, a $6.95, it's yours forever. You plug in the email address of the guy or guys you want your activity logs to be sent to, and it's virtually unbeatable. We're told you really, if you uninstall it, your partners know right away. If you disable it, it reactivates whenever you go online. So it's a good boundary for those of us who from time to time are going to need a boundary.
Which there may be some people out there that don't. Have you talked much about Triple X Church?
I don't know that I have. Not since Allie went to the porn show in Miami.
Yeah. Well, I think...
Because
we did a show a while ago when we had a guest talking about the iPhone and the accountability software. Remember some time ago?
Right. Jesse.
Jesse. And so this is a good refresher, I think, to talk about the phone. Because we always think about the computer and other things like that, but we hardly talk about the phone.
It's a brand new scary world now with wireless iPads and phones and a zillion ways.
Oh, yeah.
for dangerous stuff to those of us who are susceptible to it.
Mm-hmm.
Dangerous stuff to get to us. And if we want to live a sober, sane life, then we got to put up some appropriate boundaries.
So, Aaron, you were asking Nate to talk about the Triple X Church a little bit.
Well, no, I was just, for those folks that are listening that aren't sex addicts or porn addicts, to bear with us in this conversation because this is important. Triple X Church software has it for the iPhone. It also has it for the Droid. It's free for your Mac or your PC. And what it really does is take away the anonymity of surfing the web, where you get to plug in one or two people's email addresses, and then any activity, it just sends them an email either every 2 weeks or 4 weeks, sends it out to your partners, and anything that was questionable or inappropriate, yeah. It just
and
gets
that's
listed.
Not, that's not to shame
so
you.
Basically,
that's just to clue your friends in. If you get in the weeds, somebody knows you're in trouble.
Right, exactly.
So it's important that you have... that you list your activity with somebody who, when they see questionable activity, will love you enough to pick up the phone and call you.
Now, could that be your Silas?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
It could be your Silas. Check that out.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm quite happy to have, have the new widescreen Droid phone here with all kinds of cool apps.
It looks like you have the extended battery.
I do. I bought that monster battery, put on it. Now it won't fit in a holster, but at least it'll run all day. With all the phone calls I take and make, I pretty much need the extended battery.
Yeah.
And during the break, I'll be teaching Nate how to turn his dinner back
on. It took me 2 days to figure out how to answer this thing.
Nate, did you go to a meeting this week?
I went to the mothership meeting here in Franklin, Tennessee. Had a great meeting. The topic, once again, I got there a little bit late. It's killing me. That tardiness habit of mine is so difficult to break. I have an aversion to being early. I don't know what that's about.
Hmm.
So I try to hit it right on the nose, and then if anything goes wrong, I'm late. So for about the third week straight, I was a few minutes late for the meeting. It was rolling by the time I got there. But good meeting. Topic for us was disappointment, which in my sharing group, at least, everybody was able to relate to. We didn't have any difficulty talking personally around the topic of disappointment. For me, if you're interested, it occurs to me that if I'm living in disappointment, that's a pretty good sign that I'm spending too much of my time in the future. Disappointment is a function of expectation. It's expectations that really get me into trouble. When I'm wandering out too far in the future, trying to plan what I'm going to do, or trying to control people, places, and events, trying to script life in the way I want it so that I get the outcome that I think is going to make me happy. Because my ability to control is very, very, very limited, I'm doomed to disappointment. Now, not all disappointment is bad or toxic, and I need to admit that I'm disappointed when I am. But if disappointment becomes my chronic state, then that's a sign that I really do not believe that there is a God who is in control, who loves me, who cares for me, and who will give me today everything I need. I'm not living one day at a time, and I'm not living in faith. I'm living by self-propulsion, trying to control, and reaping the inevitable results of that kind of pride. So I talked some about my own personal disappointment. I tend to get disappointed when I try to rush the pace of my own recovery. When I want perfection and not progress. If I'm too disappointed in myself, it's a sign that I don't have healthy humility. I somehow think that I ought to be bigger and better than I am. Anyway, we had a great sharing time in our group.
That's awesome.
And when we got back together toward the end of the meeting, it seemed like everybody's experience in their groups was good last week.
Would you say, too, to bring it back to a gospel identity kind of thing, that if I have too much disappointment, it's because I've attached way too much of my identity, not to who I am in the gospel, who I am in Christ, but who I am in my flesh, that my expectation is somehow that that which is broken but is not me is me. I'm confused with my identity.
Oh, yeah, that's a real good point. Yeah, I need always to take my actions seriously because they show, you know, where my heart is. But I'm not my actions. Yeah.
Well, you can ponder these weighty things, and we will be back with more from the Pirate Monk Podcast. Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We are glad that you found us this week, and it is time to find out if anybody sent a letter to the P.O. Box.
Well, the P.O. Box is still lonely, but email works.
Yeah.
This just shows.
Should we do like a prize or something? Can we do a prize for someone that sends a P.O. Box
letter? Let's develop a prize.
An autographed book or something?
The first person to actually...
Yeah, to actually send something to the P.O. Box. We've had it for 5 months now. I think we've only gotten like maybe coupons and a little mess in there. But yeah, so maybe after the next segment, we'll come back with a prize for the first person that sends in something to the P.O.
Box. Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Well,
all right, what came to our electronic mailbox then, Nate?
Got a question about the last episode, and specifically about a song that was played on it. Just finished listening to episode 39, wanted to know the name of the song. And the CD this song is on, the song was played about 40 minutes in. Some of the words were, "The light of faith is a battle that no man the fight of faith is a battle that no man should ever lose. Hold on to the truth, stand up and fight, fight the good fight, you were called to fight the fight." Is this a song by your featured guest, Matthew Ward? And the answer is yes. Yeah, that's a Matthew Ward tune called Warrior, and it's on his Fortress CD, which is available on iTunes and CD Baby. All right, on a more serious note. Oh, news from England.
England.
Yeah. When we were on the pub walk this summer, we were joined one day by a guy, a university pastor from Nottingham, England, who drove down to the Cotswolds where we were, hiked with us for the day. His name was Joshua Jones. Got this note from him this week. "Hello, guys, I'm enjoying the podcast. I thought I'd let you know how we're getting on. We started the first chapter of the Pirate Monks here in Nottingham. The first, I think, in the UK, earlier this month. So far, we're running about 14 guys, most of whom are university age. It's too early to see how things will go, but so far, the fellows involved are quite enthusiastic, and most have read one of the copies of the book you sent. They're tired of shallow Christian friendships, value the opportunity to share their lives and just talk in a safe environment. Thanks so much, Joshua Jones."
That's awesome, man.
That is beautiful.
That's awesome.
Okay. This note from Gary Benscoter. "Just finished listening to one of the most recent podcasts. I enjoy the banter, but I really look forward to hearing about the deep issues and struggles we men have. Thanks, Nate, for sharing about the deep pain in your childhood and the resulting struggles with addiction. I, too, have had to go through much of the same process. 5 years ago, after overcoming 30 years of alcoholism, God showed me that I needed to work on other deep issues that have been unresolved since my childhood. By identifying my feelings, I've come into a lot of understanding of four major traumas experienced in my childhood. All of this has not been easy. I've learned to grieve the losses. This was a process I'd never done before. Much of my healing comes from a process called formational prayer, put together by a guy named Terry Wardle. His website is healingcareministries.org. I now lead healing care groups, small groups that go through 18 weeks of meetings with spiritual teaching and experiential components. In all this, we never try to fix each other. The focus is always on seeking the Holy Spirit for what He shows us. As a group, we accept each other with a lot of love and a lot, and we try to live in a room of grace. We learned this from the information about community found in the book True-Faced by Thrall, McNichol, and Lynch. We've been hearing a lot about that book. Mm-hmm, yeah. Constance talks about mm-hmm. that book. While I'm still dealing with a lot of pain and brokenness from my childhood, God has given me a ministry to others who are broken and struggle with addictions. I'm so very blessed to be in a position to model Christ's love to others in need. One of my favorite quotes is from Paul Bilheimer, an evangelist, who said, "Learn to cherish the suffering that shapes you into the image of Christ. It's a gift from God." Again, guys, thanks for what you're doing. Gary. Nice letter.
Yeah, awesome.
We appreciate the pointers. We love all the letters that come to us. Love for you to write us this week. You can reach us at letters@samsonsociety.org, or you can put pen to paper.
Mm.
Put that paper in an envelope.
What a concept.
Lick a stamp and affix it to the envelope.
Effort.
Yes. Give it to a uniformed person who comes by your house.
Man.
And if it's addressed directly, it will come to us here physically in Franklin, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. It will arrive at Box 224, Franklin, Tennessee, 37065.
Is that right?
Yes. Four.
Well, no wonder no one sends it. You guys don't know your zip code.
See, we're living in a post office world.
Yeah.
Soon we're all going to fit. We're going to all forget our post office addresses because everything's going to be electronic.
Yeah.
37065.
Yeah. So,
and
Nate,
if you are the first to actually send a letter to that, if we can justify the expense of the mailbox rental with just one letter,
just one. 5 months of rental.
Yes.
With one letter.
We will pack a care package here on the air.
Oh, yeah. And send it directly to you.
Yeah, that's right. So,
all right. Hey, maybe we can do that when I come to town.
That's a good plan.
All right. So if somebody gets someone makes it happen, we can do it.
Aaron will be coming here to the New Jerusalem in the first week of November. And while he's here, we will, on the air, pack the care package that will go to the first person to send a letter to Box 224, Franklin, Tennessee, 37065. And we'll...
And our special guest just made a good point that I could actually come via the P.O. Box just to show everyone how
Mail
it works.
Mail yourself. Then... All right. That's it for this segment. We'll be back on the Pirate Monk podcast.
Hurt by the pavement starting over. Picking up pieces on our road. And burned by the system we are under. Giving up is all we've ever known. Hope is a word left undefined. When dreams get pushed aside, we are all wounded soldiers. Trying to get back on our feet. Don't even know the war is over. Still searching for relief. When are we gonna open our eyes and see we've been redeemed? Wounded soldiers, lost in the haunting memories, making it impossible to leave, and cause, costing all of our sanity. We are all wounded soldiers trying to get back on our feet. Don't even know the war is over. Still searching for relief. When are we gonna open our eyes and see we've been redeemed? Wounded soldiers.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. Aaron, I see here on the screen via Skype that you are not alone there in Studio A. You have not one, but two guests with you. Could you introduce them for us?
Yes, indeed. The man to your left, Nate, is Fred Bull Cheney, man who runs a group called the Griffin Society.
He has
a society, too.
We should have a society.
And I'm going to let him explain a little bit of
great.
The Society Society. Okay. The SS. I don't know. Anyways. we'll let Bull explain a little bit more about that. But also is one of his guys, Andrew Farney, who's also a part of the Griffin Society. So, real quick, Bull, give us a little breakdown about what the Griffin Society is, what the Griffin Houses are, and why you started it.
We started the Griffin Society, as a group of people that wanted to stay out of jail more than they wanted to go back to jail. And that might sound funny to John B. Citizen, but or Joan B. Citizen, but there are people that actually feel more comfortable on the inside than on the outside.
Yeah.
And so we had started out as a support group, and it just grew. It got bigger and bigger. People didn't want to do 12-step, but we were doing 12-step. So our core group was all 12-step people, but the overall, you know, people that we were trying to serve and help out, you know, didn't want to go to Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, or whatever. And so they heard that it was we called it Conanon. So we got a Conanon thing going, and then the parole officers started referring to us, and we kind of had a group. It was like a bunch of homeboys, you know. But we were referring out to 12-step because that's what was working for us. So it was a 12-step group, but they just didn't know it, you know? So it worked, and we turned into a referral group. But you would come home from, if you were the newest person out of the penitentiary or to hit the streets, we would find out what your needs are and then cater to your needs. Because we were told when we started this thing, if we find what the needs are and cater to them, some power greater than ourselves will take care of it. So we serving others, basically. So we started serving each other. And one of the problems was, you know, Chuck or Joe or Betty or whoever wouldn't be at a group a couple of times, and we'd figure out that they had gone back to jail. And one of the number one reasons they had gone back to jail was they were back in the neighborhood, back in a house where they shouldn't be, where it's not healthy for them. They hadn't had time to work on themselves, much less their stuff with the family and all that. So they ended up, you know, going back to jail, using, drinking, acting out, whatever it was that got them in trouble. So we decided, well, we need a safe place. Mm. Just like what I've heard, safe place, a couple of times this morning already. We need a safe place for these guys to go to. So we started aspiring to open a house and start working in the community, saving our money. And it took us about a year and a half to get half as much money as we thought we needed. And then a local therapist, believes in us. I think it takes people to believe in what you're doing for it to happen. Wrote us a check for the other half, and since then we've opened like 8 houses. So, well, we actually had 11 for a while, and then the economy did whatever. Mm. I don't know if we can blame the economy, but anyway, something happened, and we had to slow our roll a little bit.
So these are sober living houses.
Yeah. There's a place back east called the Fortune Society, and we read about them. We liked the way they got down, and so we started using the Fortune Society and Oxford House, and mixed them together, and then put our needs along with it, and kind of came up with our own way. We call it getting your griff on, the Griffin way of life. So it's really something that we got, you know, from somewhere else. In one way or another, put the good stuff together and threw out the stuff that doesn't work very well, specific to our people, you know.
Andrew, give us a quick how did you get involved with all of this?
Yeah,
well,
how did you?
I don't know, higher power, creator, whatever you choose to call it, but you know, I've known Bull a while. I'm very familiar with Griffin and what it does, and I just got to a point where enough was enough, and you know, I'm tired of prison, I'm tired of jails, I'm tired of craziness, I'm tired of just the whole game, you know. And the one thing about Griffin that is probably the most helpful to me is we're all very much alike, you know, and like Bull said, you know, they really, I wouldn't say specialized, but they relate and understand to guys like myself who've had, you know, a little bit of time behind bars and just sick of it, you know, and you know, they have just a style that works for us. And, you know, I also got to say primarily, too, is the 12-step program. And, you know, for me in particular, it's Narcotics Anonymous, period. You know, I've done organized religion, I've done relationships, I've done it all, and this is the one thing that has really gone past drugs and alcohol. That's just a byproduct, you know. There's a lot of stuff we, you know, there's a lot of stuff we carry.
So what's the difference? You come into a community and you find something that you haven't found in organized religion and all these different things. So what's the difference in being a part of this community?
Unconditional love and acceptance, no matter what you do, where you've been, and who you are, period. There's no...
That's awesome.
In 12-step program, Narcotics Anonymous, and in our organization, there's got to be structure in organization, but there's no... I don't know how to. I gotta say this tactfully, but there's no.
We don't do anything tactfully here.
Bucking for position and stature and recognition, you know.
So there's no external.
This is
so
the
there's
first,
no external.
The first shall be last and last. It doesn't matter who you are, where you've come from and what you've done. We're all capable of doing anything, management, leadership, whatever, you know, and it's unconditional. You know, growing up in a really, really organized ministry, you know, nationwide, their whole, then keep in mind I'm speaking for myself. This was my perception. This was my experience. I don't presume that anyone else has been where I've been or learned what I've learned or had the negative experiences with organized religion that I have. But the whole, you know, you get a lot of fear injected into you, you know, and then with the whole recognition and happening to be that guy in the ministry or, you know, you're forced to keep what's really going on inside, you know, and I really saw, you know, a lot of faces get put on Sunday morning because that guy's coming in, he's a head usher and he's that guy and he's the head of the music ministry or head of the Sunday school department. And I always thought, you know, it would be really cool to take one of the junior high kids and have a bucket with all the positions in the ministry in it and have them stand at the door. And whoever comes through the door and pulls out that tag that has, all right, this is your job today. All right, this is your job today. You know, and that would be awesome, you know, because then everybody would be involved. There would be no, I got to be that dude. And I think a lot of walls would come down. I think a lot of people would be forced to be who they are. You know, that's, I mean, funny. How the heck do we get anywhere not being who we are? I mean, I've experienced personally, I've got a lot of records from being that dude, that homeboy, that's dead.
So, Nate, are you starting to see why I asked these guys to
just,
come in?
This is just awesome. I got to tell you, Bull, we had a bit of an experiment here in Franklin. And that, for now, that experiment has ended. It was called the Samson House, and it was a house that my wife and I moved out of 3 years ago. But it was available, and there are always guys around here. I'd be interested to know on any given week how many guys have got to leave their house because of something they've done, some disagreement with their wife. Guys who are in the middle of separation, maybe destined for divorce, who are living by themselves. You know, taking a room in a motel somewhere. And anyway, I'm really concerned now about guys in isolation. I've learned that isolation kills, community heals. So we opened that house, my wife and I did, to guys who were in that situation. It wasn't a big deal. We had anywhere from 3 to 5 guys living in it at any given time. But it was absolutely astonishing to watch. Just this last year, we had 4 guys in the house all going through divorce simultaneously. Lord only knows where these guys would have wound up if they were alone, but together they were able to carry each other through the experience, and it turned out to be a positive chapter in their lives. And it's amazing, as each guy reached resolution, you know, came to the point where one phase of his life ends, another phase begins, they all got there together. Right about the time that Allie and I decided we came reluctantly to the conclusion that we couldn't carry 2 mortgages anymore. We got an offer on the old house and we sold it. And it has been demolished. The guy who bought it tore it down. There's a hole in the ground and there's foundations there for a big fancy house that somebody's going to build where the Samson house used to be. Hmm. But it was sad for me to see the old house go, and it was sad to me that we don't have an ongoing safe place for guys who find themselves in a rough spot. Bull, you have this vision. You've got 8 functioning houses now for guys coming out of prison. It's a very focused, specific thing. Men and women. Yeah. Wow. Can I ask you a question? How do you fund them?
It's not me. It's a power greater than me, man. God or something. I was lucky. I'm not like you. I didn't have any funds to waste. So I started out broke and still broke. Stayed comfortably broke. And have no idea where my car payment's going to come from. I have no idea. I eat food bank food just like the rest of the gang does. And serve my brothers on a daily basis. I think the key is service. You know, we get a little bit of funding from our area. You know, from our county. Because we've been in business so long now that we've actually made a difference, you know. County Drug and Alcohol Services, when we get done here, we're going across the street to mental health because I go over there and talk to people inside mental health. We get phone calls from the emergency rooms for overdoses, alcohol detox, stuff like that. We've just done the footwork and gotten known.
Yeah.
And so I get about somewhere between 60 and 100 phone calls a day. I've gotten about 7 or 8 just since we've been sitting here.
$2 million in total.
Verizon
called me and told them.
Verizon sent me a letter and called me and said, "Dude, you get some more phone calls than most corporations just on your phone. What's going on?"
Pause here for a second. What I want to say to the Christian world right now, as Bull's talking, shut up. And here's what I mean by shut up. Bull's qualifications to run a corporation where he had up to 11 houses, all of this is kind of backwards to church way of thinking, where you have to be the superhero, the super righteous, frankly the uninitiated, or at least hide your sins or you're not worthy to lead. Bull, what were your qualifications to come and start this thing? I mean, did you study it at Stanford and then get your business degree and come with
San Quentin?
San Quentin was your qualification.
San Quentin, Folsom, CMC, CRC, Chino. You know, lots of rides on the Grey Goose. I say that I did a lot of traveling and I wore a lot of jewelry and I met a lot of famous people. And I did traveling on what they call the Grey Goose, the prison bus. My jewelry was ankle bracelets and handcuffs. And the famous people I met was Tex Watson, Charlie Manson, the Schoenfeld brothers, other people like that. These guys on the inside behind the walls. So.
I really respect how thorough you were with making sure that you could relate to people from every prison. Yeah. Before you started the Griffin.
there's a lot of there's a lot more people than you think, especially in California, that that are being a part of the judicial system, the being incarcerated. We incarcerate more people in the United States than anywhere else, and I think California has just about got as many people in it than the rest of the whole United States. So. It's doesn't work. It works as an industry, because I'm sure there's plenty of people getting a paycheck because our people are locked up. But if you look at the reasons why they're locked up, they're really not very valid. They're lost. They need 12-step. They need God. They need something to. If we know what's really a trip is, you know, you guys get. I worked at a place called R&R, which is receiving and release. And that's one of the best prison jobs you can get because everything coming in comes through there and goes out through there. So, but I worked at R&R one time, and the captain told me, there's two things I want you to do. Show up every day for your job, and the other one is I want you to go to the trash can twice a day and get the Bibles. And I said, do what? Get the Bibles? And he said, yeah. And at that time, I couldn't believe that someone would throw a Bible away, you know. Not that I hadn't done it, probably in some way, left it somewhere or whatever. Kind of that's throwing it away too. But and he wasn't kidding. It was not a day. I worked there for over a year, and it was not a day. Maybe might have been 2 days in that whole year that there was not a Bible in there. And he said, you know, these guys walk with God when they're in here, man, and then soon they leave them at the door, at the gate. So when they leave, they throw the Bible away. And most of that's true, I think. Any book or anything, when you get out of prison, you know, carrying stuff around is not an easy thing to do, especially if you don't have somewhere to go. A book is a problem to carry around, but that's really not an analogy. That's the truth. That, you know, guys walk with some faith while they're in there of some sort, and they throw it away when they leave, and that's not the way it works. Man, you got to carry it with you on a daily basis. You know, you got to get up, connect. And you know, you can't send emails, you can't use the phone if you don't turn it on, you know what I mean? You gotta recharge it or it'll only work for so long, and you gotta stay connected, man.
Mm. Well, I think there's two things that have always struck me since we met, I don't know how many years ago, as board members with the AIDS Support Network, and that was one, that you didn't really see all the reasons that you couldn't do what you did. I mean, you should have known that you couldn't start a corporation with all these houses and help all these, but that's silly. You didn't have any of the qualifications to do it. So you came in with a naivete that I wish a lot of people had to actually do what you were talking about, Andrew, and that's to become who God made them to be. But then the other thing, every time we talked, I saw, and this is kind of exciting in the podcast, because all of the other guests have been part of the organized evangelical church, and I wanted you guys to be here. I wanted Bull to be here, and you're the bonus, Andrew. Because you're doing this totally outside of that. I mean, you run your sweat lodge meetings and things like that. And yet, every time I talked to you, you had more practical Christian mercy than any Christian that I knew. And it was in part because of the community that you have just absolutely lived in, where mercy is a daily part of life. Because you got people that are admitting, yep, I've got brokenness. They're not trying to hide it, and they're still struggling. And I remember we were talking about people that would blow it, and there would be consequences, but then you would always bring them back. There was always an open door when they were ready to come back and do it again. And I thought, man, in my life, there's usually a limit. You know, I'll give you some grace, I'll give you some mercy, but oh, you did that again? I don't know how many times before I'm just sick of dealing with it. And I think that's the way most Christians I know are. But when I talk to you, that is not the community you live in. So can you explain to Christians what grace and mercy means, please?
That's a heavy one, man. I think it means I'm not God. It means that I'm just
number one, not God.
I'm here to serve my brothers. I don't have to trust anybody. I guess you could put it. It's not trust. It's not trust in that person. It's trust in the Creator. Trust in that. Okay, so you brought this person to me for some reason. What is it? Is it my lesson? Is it their lesson? Is it our lesson? Is it a lesson for the community? What? There's a lesson here. So give us the lesson. I miss the lesson if I turn them away, right? So I'm a hoop guy. I like to have them jump through hoops, you know, but sometimes. But, you know, I, after a while, I do want to see a little, you know, okay, what's going to be different this time? You know, what's going to be different from the last 12 times that you got out of prison or you got out of jail, or other than you got a cane now and you and you're not as... not as healthy as you used to be, but what's driving you? What are you gonna do different, man? So.
But man, on time 12 or 13, they still know they can come back to you. I mean, I remember hearing a story of one of your staff guys that I got to hang out with that went back to prison, and he was so ashamed he didn't want to see you, and when he got out, who's the first person he sees? You saying, all right, come on back, let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's. That's basically the equivalent of a pastor who blows it and does not act in a pastoral way, and then having the senior pastor or the elders come and pick him up and say, come on back, let's get started again. I mean, how's that ring with you, Nate?
I mean, it's a, you know, grace and mercy are beautiful things. And you recognize it when it's described to you the way that Bull has just described it to us. I really appreciate your perspective, Bull, and I so appreciate the fact that for you, mercy begins with the admission that I'm not God. That's a point that Jesus made over and over again. If If we have been forgiven, then it's inexcusable for us not to forgive others. If we've been shown mercy, it's inexcusable for us not to show mercy to others. It just shows that we don't apprehend the love of God. We don't believe the gospel, or we haven't fully appropriated the mercy that's ours. I think one of the reasons that Christians tend to be cruel to each other is that deep down we don't really believe that God loves us. I know that was true for me when I first went into 12-step groups. It was so humbling for me at the age of 42, with a master's degree in religion, a guy had been a pastor, a guy had grown up in a Christian church, to come into a room full of people who, from my perspective, didn't even call God by his proper name. They only spoke about a higher power. But they knew, in a way that I didn't, that he was there and that he loved them, and that they could only follow him together. There was a cohesiveness in that group that I had never seen before, a love for one another, an acceptance of one another that I had not seen before, and which served as a reproof to everything that had passed for Christian faith in my life up until that point. I'm sitting here and I'm smiling because the beauty of what I see in your life and in the work that God's given you to do. There's also a tinge of sadness in me because so few of us who call ourselves Christians have felt or given that kind of mercy.
Yeah, I have a question for Bull. What do you think the cause is for the guys when they're incarcerated? They feel that I'm close to God, but as soon as they hit the gate, they tend to leave the Bible at the gate. I heard a sermon yesterday about, and an illustration was given about how a guy will swim out into the ocean, and he wants to kill himself. He's asking for God's help, and then he decides, hey, I don't want to die, so let me swim back. And as he gets closer, like, God, I promise when I get back to shore, I'll go to church every day. As he realizes he's going to make it, God, I'm going to go to church once a week. And then his feet hit the ground. He's like, well, God, I promise I'll go once a month. And then once he's on dry land, it's like, God, I'll get there when I get there. You know, so what is that thing about where guys are incarcerated, guys and gals, why do you feel that they just leave God at the door?
I used to think, or I say this when I go speak at places, I used to think that God was in the trunk of a cop car, because the only time I prayed was when I had handcuffs on and they asked me to put your head down, put my head down to put me in the cop car. I figured since I'm already bowed down, mm-hmm. I might as well just go ahead and break one off, you know. And so I would sit in the backseat of that police car and pray these selfish prayers. Yeah. Don't let the other guy tell on me, you know. Don't have them tow my car. Please don't let them look in my pockets. Have them handcuff me in front. Blah, blah, blah. I hope I go to San Quentin because that was my favorite prison. You know, all this stuff is all about me, 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 me. And I stayed connected to God the whole time I was on the inside in one way or another. I talked to him quite a bit because I was one of those guys that for the first week was in a cell by myself. They never put me in general population. I'm also HIV positive as a result of my drug addiction, you know. So they would have to make sure I was not violent and all that stuff before they put me in general population, because they didn't want me fighting or biting somebody or whatever. And so I had to go through this process of being in a cell by myself. So I got a lot of time with God inside. And I don't know why. I use myself as an example because I was in prison with 4,000 or 5,000 guys all at one time, right? So we had a common bond. One was our criminality, one was our addictions, and the other one was being a convict, you know. So I figure most of the things going on in my mind probably went on in theirs as well. Mm-hmm. That's one of the common bonds I found in 12-step is that I'm not as unique as I thought I was.
Yeah.
You know? I thought I was unique, and then come to find out, I think just like everybody else thinks, or they think just like I think, to a greater or lesser degree. So I don't know exactly the answer to that.
Yeah.
But I do know that we got self-will.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to think that we don't have so much self-will while we're on the inside. Mm-hmm. We get structure in there, and we let them structure our life. And then when we get out, we take our will back, kick God to the curb, and go on about our will, getting what we want rather than what we need.
Yeah.
And generally, with a mind like mine, a criminal mind, it doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I want to hear, before you go on, I want to hear what Andrew has to say about it. He had thoughts. I heard it in his mm-hmms.
His hat curls a little bit when he's thinking.
Well, I agree absolutely 100% with what Bull says. You know, when you're locked up and scared and stressed and, you know, family issues and, you know, yeah, you're going to run to God. You're going to run to God quick. But, I mean, why are you really running to God, you know? You don't run to God when you're scared, you know? You run to God because you need God. You're a creator, you know? When you get out and you hit the streets, you're healthy. You've been healthy, you know, you've been working out and eating fairly decent and doing the deal for 2 or 3 years and hit the streets with all your plans, you know, and you're... As soon as you get through those doors, man, you're like, oh, I got this. You know, I don't need God. I got this. I'm under control. I can handle it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a matter of time before you're through. You know, another thing, and I'm just going to throw this out there, is, you know, a lot of guys in there use it as a shield.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they grab their Bible and they post up and it's a shield.
Right.
And you see that a lot. And I think the troubling thing for me with that is it really doesn't matter what's going on there.
Right.
You know, because there are a lot of guys in there whose lives have changed because of their relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I saw and had a lot of, not respect or didn't admire them, but I saw that, you know, these guys weren't going anywhere. I met this guy in one of the penitentiaries I was in. He was never getting out, ever, period. Now, if that was me, I'd be pretty mad. I'd be pretty mad at God, society, and everything. This dude was so cool and laid back, and, you know, he was doing 3 life sentences.
Most lifers are like
that. Yeah, he's not going to go anywhere, you know, but he was just like, yeah, God's cool, you know, and I'm all,
yeah.
Wow, you know, and maybe it was my, you know, my ignorance and my not quite being ready to accept who my creator was that made him seem so cool and together, but, you know, to this day, I still think about this dude, you know, I wonder, boy, what's his, I already know what his day, like, 6 o'clock child, you know, da-da-da-da. But, you know, it just, there was something there. You can see it in his eyes. You know, a lot of guys doing a lot of time, they just got that. They're just there. This dude had vigor. Yeah. He was excited about life. And, you know, and I couldn't fathom that. I mean, I was just doing a short little hitch. And this guy was doing all day. And I'm like, what do you got to be excited about, dude? You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was just amazing, you know? Mm. But, you know. I guess there's many reasons why we leave, you know, God at the door, you know.
I asked that question for a reason. That wasn't just random. And I don't think you guys know this about my life. My older brother has been in and out of prison for the last 20 years, federal and state. And I've asked him that question, too. And my dad and I, just 2 days ago, were having a conversation about my brother. And why is it that, you know, when he's in, he seems so close to God? You know, why is it? Now, my dad's a pastor, okay? Oldest son in prison, you know, just got out. His tune with my brother being out now is way different than it was when we went to see him. And, you know, there was a point where I was judgmental. I believe some of my family was, you know. But then I thought about it. And I asked you guys that to set this whole this revelation for myself was, man, I'm the same way sometimes.
Mm.
I can't judge my brother.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the same way. When I have crisis, man, I'm like, Lord, help me. And as soon as things start clearing up, maybe it's not the gate. Maybe it's my front door.
Mm.
Maybe it's my car door. Mm-hmm. It don't have to be a gate. And so, you know, I challenge. A lot of people will probably be in the position I used to be in, and will look at guys who have been incarcerated, mm-hmm. or people who have been in life crises like that, and say, well, and judge them. Well, you only want God when you're in something. Or like my man was talking about the face. I mean, there's a whole lot of people in church today. Just yesterday, had a face on. Mm-hmm. It's not just the face of being incarcerated. It's called the face in church.
Yeah.
It's called, you know, judging people, you know, and understanding, like, man, we act the same way sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's not a penitentiary thing. Mm-hmm. It's not an addiction thing. It's a human thing where we all deal with that thing of going closer to God when all hell breaks loose. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as it lightens up a little bit, we start realizing, oh, well, yeah, okay, maybe I did a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I don't need him as much as I thought I did. Mm-hmm. Or who's God? You know, so I asked that just to kind of set that up, because I know that was, it's a huge part of my life, and what you guys are speaking is definitely touching me, and I'm resonating with a whole lot of what you guys are saying.
I'm hearing a little of the preacher boy in there right there, Mondo. I don't know how much time we have. We're probably coming to the close of this. Any last thoughts before we head to a break?
No, I just want to express my gratitude to you guys for coming in and talking to us.
Absolutely.
Making the sacrifice of getting up early and getting over there to Studio A. Bull, how long have Griffin Houses been in operation now?
We got the idea in like 99. I opened our first house in 01. So we're relatively new, you know. Okay. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, only because we thought that'd be a good idea to be a nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
do you have a mailing? Do you have a mailing address of folks? Our listeners around the country.
Box. You want some mail? I could get some mail in your P.O. box, man. That's for sure. We do have a mailing address. It just changed, so you could use P.O. Box 13921, San Luis Obispo, California, 93406.
That is wonderful.
So, you know, I want to thank you for, you know, what you guys are doing here. This is, you know, it comes from the heart. You know, that's what I learned about this program, about helping others, is you got to do it from your heart, not your head, you know. And so it looks to me like you guys are doing this from your heart. You're walking the talk before you go out and talk about it. You're walking it. And I think it's really important that you walk the road, you know. It's hard to just look at a map and tell somebody where to go, unless you've walked down that road, you know. Mm. And it's important. Even if it's not your gig, it's still a good idea to go try it out, you know. And before you point somebody down that way, you know, or hook them up with somebody that has walked down that road, it's important. Because, you know, I wouldn't listen to therapists before I got some clean time behind me. I'll listen to them now because I know they have something to give me, but I wouldn't listen to them before. I'd listen to another dope fiend first. So, thank you for what you're doing, man. This is cool. This is way cool. You know, you got to get raw with things, man. You got to get
Absolutely.
Right. So, you know, you get
Absolutely.
Raw and right with things, and it happens, you know. Mm. So, you guys are doing some good stuff, man. Good shit.
Well, Lord, I tell you what, I'm coming out with in San Luis Obispo at the end of January. I'm going to be there with my bride, and love to catch a cup of coffee with you while I'm there, Bull.
Bring your shorts. We'll put you in a sweat lodge.
Okay. And we'll be right back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Right back here on the Pirate Monk Podcast, it's time, Mondo, to make a phone call to our favorite Knoxville pirate monk, Rob Brown, and get the skinny on the upcoming 48 Hours of Frankness. Can you make that happen?
Yes, we can. Let's give him a shout. Ring, ring. Rob, are you there?
Hey, guys.
What's up, guys?
That was impressive.
Yeah, don't you love that technology?
Unbelievable.
That's called the pre-call. Feature.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I tried to Skype you in, as you know, tried to make this conference call work with Aaron, and we couldn't figure it out. So you get to talk to Mondo and me, and we'll go back to Aaron at the conclusion of this phone call. I did want to talk with you. You guys have got another 48 Hours of Frankness in Tennessee coming up shortly, don't you?
We do. November the 12th, we've got our third annual 48 Hours here in Townsend, Tennessee, and that's will be in the foothills of the Smoky Mountains. So yeah, we are fired up and excited about it. We've got I think about 14 as of this morning already registered from I don't know, 5 or 6 different states, and even a Samson brother that is currently in the country he's a missionary in Japan and belongs to one of the Samson one of the two Samson groups there in Japan currently, and is wanting to start a third, and thought that it would be a great thing for him to come to a 48 Hours and explore and experience more of the path before they start a new group.
Well, that really is an excellent idea. I know it's going to pay big dividends for this guy and for his brothers in Japan. There really is no better way to experience the path than to come to a 48 Hours of Frankness weekend, especially one that's being run by Rob Brown. This guy is the wizard of 48 Hours. Come on, he can make it happen and take you all the way through the path once in 48 Hours. If you've been trying to adapt the way you're used to doing church or used to doing men's groups or accountability relationships, if you're kind of bringing old habits that haven't served you well in the past into this new group and you feel like the group is kind of limping, your own experience lacks depth and strength, then by all means, get yourself to a 48 Hours of Frankness. Get yourself some orientation and training. It can be a life-changing experience.
It can be. I mean, you're absolutely right. I couldn't be any more fired up about it. And this, I think, will be number 5 that I've been involved in this past couple of years. And each time, I'm always amazed at what God does in me and in this walk. And it's just it's amazing. And to see so many men come together and Nate and Mondo, what really is amazing is the instantaneous bond of that brothers have when they first arrive because of Samson.
Mm.
And they've never met before, and yet they have this common bond right off the bat. And the awkwardness of spending a weekend together with strangers, it just doesn't exist. It's very interesting. So, yes, it is an intense weekend, as you've clearly communicated, but it's one that'll leave you it'll never be the same.
Are we calling this one a 48 Hours of Frankness intensive?
I personally don't, but you know, you guys have kind of coined that term, and yeah, I mean, it's definitely intense. It's not a go golf kind of thing, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, what I found is that men come to do work. They come longing for more. They've been going to meetings or have read the book, but a lot of times they've been going to meetings and wanting to know what now, you know, what's next. And there's a lot of things that, and just going through the meetings that guys haven't come to understand and haven't experienced yet, and really in the silence relationship, and course and consequences, what it means to be part of a greater body, and prayer, study, and self-examination. I mean, quite frankly, I think most men, including myself, just super suck at prayer, praying with another man, praying with another man, you know, and then study, being forced to take the time to study, and oh my gosh, maybe you know, write some things from your heart in a journal, and again, experience that with other men is just incredible. It's just absolutely incredible.
And plans are underway to do a few more of these weekends next year, right?
Oh gosh, I was hoping that you wouldn't ask that question, just because of sheer intimidation. But yes, there are plans underway for 2011 48 Hours Tour. We are lining up 10 cities and states in 10 months for 2011. We've done some homework on studying the concentration of Samson Brothers across the country, and have kind of determined those 10 cities. But it's going to require a good bit of work. We've got a really strong, passionate team. And so we'll have one of the first ones coming up in Orlando. I'll just tell you, it's really exciting is to look at some of these cities. You know, Orlando and Boston and St. Louis and Denver, Austin. Some guys are really pulling and fired up about doing one in New Orleans.
Wow.
Atlanta, there's you know, guys already working weekly on preparing for one in Atlanta. So what our intention is with all this, Nate, is to, and these are going to be max of 35 of guys who can attend, and the whole point and purpose and main vision and focus is to equip, you know, teams of two or three that come to these things to be able to go back to their local areas and groups and have their own.
Mm-hmm.
And several groups are doing that right now in Richmond, Virginia, and up in one of the groups in Minnesota are having their own fall retreats after they came or had one in the spring. They're doing another one in the fall. And so it's really a seed planting thing that we're just hoping and praying that God will do, continue to do a mighty work through these efforts.
Cool. Well, Lord bless you for your vision and for all your hard work. You've become a key man, Rob, in the lives of so many Samson brothers. And, you know, I'm indebted to you and to Francie, your wife, and your family. I know that you know what it's like to battle, to balance family, work, and ministry. And I'm praying that you continue to walk that line as well as you have.
Well, you know, I really appreciate that, and I know that you mean it, and that means a whole lot to me. And before you called, Francie and I, you know, I had to call Francie and tell her, you know, that you were calling, and I was just a little freaked out about, you know, kind of the reality of launching this tour in all these different states, and it is difficult to balance. But you know, the other thing too is, Satan is the great deceiver of planting seeds in my mind of, should we really do this? You know, is this the right thing? Am I up to, you know, leading a team and setting out to do this? You know, how will men respond? Will they come? And all those things. And no, the Lord's promises are true.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to believe any of these lies. And you know, we continue to get calls. I get calls, you know, every day, every other day, of men wrestling with their wives, of, you know, coming to this and praying together, and they continue to come. And that continues to encourage me, and so does Francie. And Francie just kind of let me have it 30 minutes before you guys called about, you know, this is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
you need to do this. And so here we are. Here we go.
All right, brother. Well, full speed ahead. We'll see what lies down the road. Thanks so much for picking up the phone, Rob, and thanks for all your hard work on behalf of your brothers in the Samson Society.
Hey, you guys too. You guys keep up the great work and the mission, and press on towards the goal.
That's it. That's it. We'll talk to you later.
All right. See you guys.
Oh, pirate's life is a wonderful life, for roving over the sea. Could be a career as a buccaneer. It's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
All right, and now we'll flip back to Aaron. Aaron, you still with us?
I'm still with you,
You didn't hear any of that
mate.
Conversation with Rob, did you?
No, but it was awesome.
It always is. Every conversation is awesome here on the Pirate.
I love Bobby Brown. Bobby Brown's a good guy.
You know, maybe that's a way to close out the show. Maybe a little Bobby Brown.
My prerogative.
It's my prerogative. We're on the same page, Mondo. Well, but I want to announce, because next week I still get to be Studio A, because we're bringing a special guest in from Phoenix, Arizona, Speaker Chris Simning, who he speaks to a lot of youth camps and college groups. He's a guy that was struck with a disability at a very young age, like junior high. And his experience in community, his Christian friends in high school that loved him through some really horrible experiences, in a lot of ways saved him. And so he's going to be talking about what community looks like from the perspective of someone who could have been the outcast, but the church actually stepped up. So I'm excited to have like a, hey, church, it
worked. Not a hey, church, shut up conversation. It'll be great. Okay.
Exactly. I don't want to just bring non-Christians in to, explain the other side. So it's going to be really good. It's going to be fun. So tune in for that. Chris Simning next week.
And I think that about does it. What a wonderful conversation that was with Bull and his sidekick, whose name I keep forgetting. Andrew. Bull and Andrew. On the Pirate Monk Podcast. Until next week, it's Nate, Mondo, and Aaron saying goodbye and God bless.